Okay, we're going to go back a bit just to get us back on the point. Rav told us a very important halacha, hamakadesh b'milva einu mekudeshes. A man marries a woman with a loan, it's not a good kedushin. And we explained that that means if he lends her money previously, and now that means the money he gave her was his asset and she had an accounts payable to him. Now, if the man just says, be married to me with the asset that I gave you the last time, wants to get married to her with that, it's not a good kedushin because she still has the debt. The asset was still his. She has the debt, so she really didn't get anything. She just got a loan the day before, but she hasn't received anything for that. Because he says, milva lahotza'a nitna. A milva, a loan, is given for a person to spend it. And since it's meant for the person to spend it, so it's not there anymore, even if she hasn't spent it. But it's already become a debt. It's become a debt. It's his asset, that was here. That asset now has turned into an accounts receivable. That asset has now become an accounts payable for her. And now all he's saying is, be married to me with what I gave you yesterday. That doesn't work because she really hasn't any benefit. She still has to pay off the debt. So she never received anything. That's why you can't be Mekadesher. However, we explained that if he would say something different, if he would say not, Mekadesh would have given yesterday. He says, if I now am going to, what do you call it, wipe out the debt, and for the benefit of me wiping out the debt, that there's no longer an accounts payable, then that's clearly a benefit to her, and she can get married with that, because now he's removed the debt from her. That's what we've been explained up to this point. So now, we just ended off last week, the class, with a question from a Braisa. So we're going to review that part. Meisavei, we ask a question on Rav from the following Braisa. Ha'omer le'ish, if a man says to a woman, Hiskat shalit b'pikaron sheish li b'yadcha, be married to me with the deposit that I have in your hands. In other words, he gave her something to keep, to watch, okay? And he says, okay, so now when he gave it to her to watch, it was his asset that she was watching. And he says, now I want to be married to you with that asset, meaning to say you will now be the owner of that asset. So he is now giving her something that's real. Okay, now what happens? So she goes back to see the asset that he says now she can keep. But we see now it's been lost or stolen. So it's not there anymore. So is it a marriage or not? So the halacha is, im nishtar heimenu shavar pruta, if there's at least a shavar pruta left of that item, mikudesha, she is married, because there's still some amount of that asset that is there. She now will be the owner of that asset, and it's a kedushin with the fact that that has transferred ownership to her. But ve'im lav, but if there's nothing left of that asset, then eina mikudesha, she is not married. Okay, now, the Gemara has not yet explained what type of a guardian was she, which the Gemara will get to later on, because there's a whole discussion. But right now we're saying that if he wants her now to be married with that, she's not married, because there's nothing there to give her. Okay, that's if he wants to marry her with a deposit that was by her. Now, this is the first opinion of this Braisa. Now the first opinion continues. Ube milva, but what if he gave her a loan? And then he says, I want to be married to you with the loan. I've got to be careful how to explain this part now. And then we go and take a look, and let's say the loan, she lost or whatever, or we'll see. Afal pishol nishtar menu shavar pruta. Even though there's nothing left, could be she spent it all, whatever, there's nothing left. Mekudesha, she is married. Okay, now why is she married? Let's again review the notes here. Rashi explains that the instrument of betrothal would be the benefit the woman receives by having her loan forgiven. Okay, we got to understand that, because that alone would not be a question on Rav. You got to remember, because Rav said that would be okay, so we have to see. If the actual money of the loan has already been spent, the woman nevertheless receives a valuable benefit from the man's forgiving her loan, and this benefit, which is worth at least the pruta, serves as the money of kiddushin. So we'd have to know, according to that explanation, we still wouldn't have a question on Rav yet. Okay, according to that explanation, there would not be a question on Rav. We're not done yet. But anyway, so first of all, he says, so if it's a loan, he wants to marry with a loan, even though there's nothing left, it's a kiddush. Rips.
Yeah. It's
well, that's the way Rashi is learning it. So Rashi's learning, that's what he's... It's how you want to translate the words Mekudeshes B'milva. You want to marry with a loan. Does it mean to say with the actual money of the loan that you gave her, or with you are now forgoing the loan? Well, that's the halacha, but how do you want to translate those words in the Gemara? It's up to your discretion. In other words, you have the words Mekadesh B'milva. So we already had an explanation of that way it sense. Now, Rashi's explanation here is saying it works. Okay, we could learn not like Rashi and say it's Mekudeshes by the fact he gave it to her. Okay, we can learn it that way too. But be that as it may, notwithstanding the question we have on Rashi, the first opinion says it is a good Kedusha. Reb Shimon ben Elazar, it won't matter our questions. You'll see, Shelley, it won't matter our questions. You'll see. Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, Mishum Reb Meir, Shimon Lazar argues on that opinion, and he says the name of Rav Meir, this last case of Mekadesh B'milva, if you marry a woman with a loan, going to the top of 47b, if you marry a woman with a loan, there's one thing they should fix. It's one of these bugs that should be fixed. So what's the halacha? He doesn't just say she's mekudeshes. He says harehi kipikadam. It's like we said before by a pikadam. So what do we say by a pikadam? What do we say? There's got to be something left in the pikadam. If there's something in the loan, if she didn't spend it all, the first opinion is saying by a pikadam there has to be something left. By a milva, you're married even there's nothing left. Reb Meir says, no, by a loan, it's just like a pikadon. So what do you mean, just like a pikadon? Just like a deposit, that there's got to be something left. If this, she hasn't spent it all. If she hasn't spent it all, then it's a good marriage. So now, let's see how the Pnei Yeshua explains this. I believe a nice note over here. Pnei Yeshua gives this explanation of the dispute between the Tanoim. The Tanakhama maintains that Kedushin will always be valid through a loan. For even if the original money is no longer intact, the woman will still become betrothed through the benefits she receives and no longer having to repay the debt. Rav Shimon Elazar, however, argues that the woman can become betrothed through this benefit only if the man specifies to her that this should be the instrument of betrothal. That is, he must say, become betrothed to me through the benefit you receive from the forgiving of this loan. He has to say it specifically. Okay, specifically. If he does not explicitly state this, though, we can assume that the woman had a mind to become betrothed through the actual money she borrowed. Thus, when the money was already spent, Kiddushin does not take effect. Okay, so really, if you learn that way, I don't see a question at all. Right? Anyway, with that explanation, I don't see what the Gemara's question is going to be. Anyway, the Gemara suggests that the question is as follows. Without all this wonderful explanation, Ad kan lo pligi, it seems that there's no machlokas between these two opinions by a loan. Demar sover, what's the argument? That one opinion, meaning the first opinion, that they don't argue, but the first opinion says, Demar sover milva alone. Afal gavdol nishtar hemenishav pruta. Even though there's not a penny left to the loan, it's a good kiddushin. Umar Sover, and the other one holds, Nishtar Menu Shava Prutain, if there's a penny left, then yes. Vilo Nishtar Menu Shava Pruta Lo. But if there isn't a penny left, then it's not. However, they both agree there are scenarios where you can marry the woman with a loan. Of the Kuli Alma Kadesh Milma Kudeshus. According to everybody, she can be married with the loan. Okay, the problem with this question of the Gemara is, based on all the commentary, there's still to be no question. All right? Because all the explanations have been in concert with what Rav has been saying. So we have lots of trouble understanding this Gemara's question. Be that as it may, Rav is going to knock it off anyway for another reason. All right? But in other, the way we've explained things so well, I don't really see the question, and I'm surprised Art Scroll hasn't piped up to say anything over here. That why is this a question? It seems that, yeah, the question is, what do you want to marry her with? You want to marry her with forgoing of the loan, according to the first opinion, so that's fine. Even Rav agrees if you forgo the loan, that's okay. And the second one is saying she has to know that you want to marry her with this money that you're forgoing the loan. So I don't really see the question. Okay, we'll leave it. We'll leave it for the deeper commentaries to deal with.
And if you go with either of those, it doesn't really matter if the money is there or not.
Well, the other one says no, because we assume only if there's something there, she has in mind. The other opinion is saying she has in mind for there to be something. That's what the second opinion is adding. When you're saying you're marrying her with the loan, she's thinking there's got to be something there. She won't accept anything less than that, because she thinks she's getting married with that. Anyway, be that as it may, the Gemara felt it was a question. We don't have to worry about it so much, because Rav is going to dismember the question before it even can begin. Okay? Rav is going to come to the aid of Rav to answer this question. He's going to say, guys, the way you presented this brisa, the way you're presenting it, it doesn't make any sense at all. You can't begin to ask a question. Why? This is what is going to be his analysis. Amarle Rava. Rava defends Rav and says, now the way you just explained this brisa, v'tizbara hamatartzta, do you think you've explained things to make it in a correct way? Do you think you've shown that the brisa teaches that you can mekadesh a woman with a milvah when the money's already spent? You want to say this brisa makes sense? Hamishabeshtahi. The way you're learning the whole brisa makes no sense. I'm going to show you why this brisa makes no sense the way you've explained it. Because there's one thing you never explained. The first case says marry a woman with the deposit that you gave her. And then you come back and take a look and you see if there has to be something left of the deposit, right? Well, the question is, we didn't discuss what kind of deposit, what kind of guardian she is on the deposit. We didn't discuss, you know, when you deposit something with someone, there's three different types, or really four different types of guardians on a deposit. One is a deposit where you give the guy to watch it for free. Do me a favor, watch it for free. That's one type of guardian. We know there's very limited liability on the part of that guardian. And therefore, if there's nothing left, there's limited liability. On the other hand, let's say you pay the person to watch it. If you pay the person to watch it, there's much greater liability. If it gets lost or stolen, the person owes you the money and has to pay it back. So now we have to be clear, what does it mean that he wants to marry her with the deposit he left by her? And then we find it gets lost or stolen, where he says, well, there's got to be something left, a penny left. So let's discuss that for a minute, and let's see if this, how do you make any sense out of this? And then the second rabbi says that when you marry a woman with a loan, it's just like the law of a deposit. Well, we got to understand, well, what are we talking about in terms of the law of deposit? The deposit case is not a clear case. Because there's two different types of depositing. There's depositing someone to watch it for free. There's depositing someone who you're paying for, has a great larger responsibility. So what is exactly the case? And let's look at it either way and see if it makes any sense according to any way. And that's what's going to be the analysis now. And Rava says once we really analyze it properly, you'll see there's no question on Rav to begin with from this brisa. And this is what Rava is going to do now. Hi, Pikaron, this case, when we say you want to betroth the woman with the deposit that is by her, hey, Chidami, what is exactly the case? Has it been the person was told to do it for free, or they're getting paid? Is there responsibility for, remember, it's a case of lost or stolen. If she watches it for free, then she has no liability. If it's lost or stolen, she just swears it got lost and stolen. She doesn't have to pay. If you're a guardian that was paid, then she has to pay for that. So wait a minute. So now how is she getting married exactly? So let's see now. Let's look at both possibilities. Let's see if we can understand the brisa in a sensible way. Either couple of her eyes. Was it a case where the woman accepted responsibility if it got lost or stolen because she was paid to watch it? Is that the case? Well, think about that. If the woman took the item as a deposit from him and she's watching it and she's getting paid, right? Now, if it gets lost, What has that deposit turned into?
A liability.
It's turned into a liability, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Because in the accounting ledgers, when it's a deposit, we say it's an asset by him, and there's nothing else to put in the accounting books. Right? Now that she lost it, it becomes an accounts payable in his books, accounts receivable, and in her books, it's an accounts payable.
Yeah.
Which really is no different than when you give someone a loan. Right? If the case is that she had responsibility and now she comes back and it's lost, the Gemara asks, Hainu Milva, isn't that exactly the case of a loan? And if it's the case of a loan, how can the first rabbi make a distinction between the two cases? By a pikadon, what did he say? As long as there's a penny left. By a milva, you don't need anything left. Well, how do you make a difference between the two? It's both a loan. Right? The Bryson would be different according to the first opinion who treats them differently. Right? That's if she was paid to watch it. Right? Look at footnote 4. If the woman accepted responsibility for the item, she's required to reimburse the man once the item is lost or stolen. She'd owe this reimbursement to the man just as she might owe him money for the loan that he lent her. We thus expect the law in our case to be exactly the same as in the case of Kiddushin through a loan. Just as Tanna Kamma rules that Kiddushin through a loan is effective even if none of the original money is intact, so too he should rule that Kiddushin with the deposit does not require any part of the deposit to remain intact. In fact, the Tanna Kamma does require part of the deposit to be intact. He learns it differently. Clearly, the Bryce cannot be speaking of a woman who accepts responsibility for loss of theft. That can't be the case. That cannot be the case. So now let's go. Okay, what's the other option now? It was a deposit where she did not accept responsibility. Well, eid lo kabalach ra'is, if she did not accept responsibility, so you want to say, okay, now it makes sense at least that in the first case, if it's, she doesn't accept responsibility, as long as there's something that he can give her, she doesn't owe him anything, something he can give her. And then he says, if you're mekadesh with a loan, mekadesh alone, it's a good kiddushin, fine, that's a different scenario, okay. But then, ihaki, if that's the case, where with the case of the deposit, she had no responsibility, So now what have we done? So therefore we made distinctions in the last case. The last rabbi made a distinction. So now Gemara's gonna ask, why are we waiting to make distinctions till later? If the case is, so does it come out then there's a difference between a woman who takes a loan on with responsibility or without responsibility? Yes, it would be a different halacha, wouldn't it be? So if that's the case, Adatani Sefer, why do we have to wait until the second clause, which says uba milva and with a loan, afa pishon shtayer men shav fruit and kedush? He now says in the second halacha, with a loan, even if there's nothing left, it's a good kiddushin. So what's the first opinion saying? When you marry the pikadon, if there's a penny left, it's a good kiddushin. With a loan, you don't even need a penny. So we made a distinction between those two. Why do you gotta wait to make a distinction between the first and the second case? We can make a distinction. We should have made a distinction within the first case. Let's make a distinction in the very first half of the Tanna Kamma statement by a deposit. Why don't we, if there's clearly a difference, why didn't the Braisa say it? Braisa should have said, but when do we say that when you marry one with a deposit, if there's a penny left, it's a good kiddushin? Shalom kiblach rice, when she didn't accept responsibility. That's when the deposit, if there's still a penny left, will work. But if she did accept responsibility and it now becomes like a loan, then even if there's nothing left, mikudesh, it should still be a good kiddushin because he's foregoing the loan. Why didn't you say that distinction? Right? That's 5. Rava observes that if the Braisa deals with a woman who did not accept responsibility for the deposit in her care, then in effect, this is what the first clause teaches. When the woman does not owe anything to the man for the lost deposit, she cannot become betrothed unless a pruta's worth of it remains in her domain available for her to take. That's what it means. The second clause then, that's written there, that uses the case of a loan to teach the converse principle. If the woman does not owe money to the man, in which she borrowed money that she does owe money to the man, she can then become betrothed even if none of the loan money is currently available to her. That is, she can simply become betrothed to the benefit of not having to repay. So why do you have to come onto the case of loan? You can come onto the case of deposit to make that distinction. Rav rejects, though, that there's really no need for the two clauses of the Brice to deal with fundamentally different cases, that of a deposit and that of a loan. The Brice could have instead have drawn its distinction using one basic case, that of the deposit. In other words, the second clause of the Brice could simply have stated that the law of the first clause, that a pruta's worth must remain the original deposit, but it's only when the woman did not accept responsibility for the item in question. Whenever she did accept responsibility, she'd owe the man for the deposit, and therefore kedusha could take effect, even if no trace of the deposit remained by him foregoing her having to pay back for that. So why don't you just say the difference is right in the first case of a deposit? What do you have to come out to say a different case of a loan? When it's a loan, then it's a different halacha. No, even in a deposit it would be a different halacha. You don't have to tell me anything about loan at all. So therefore the Brisa is wrong. It's fundamentally flawed. Okay? Now look at footnote 6 that's going on. There was no distinction made, right? So therefore, if the woman did accept responsibility for the man's deposit, if she did accept, if that was the case, if she did accept, the Tana should not have ruled that a pruta's worth of the item must remain intact. Sure. We already said that doesn't make sense. If the woman did not accept, skip the brackets, if the woman did not accept responsibility, then the Tana Kama should not have mentioned a loan at all. He could have conveyed the same teaching by distinguishing between the deposit for which a woman did not accept responsibility for the deposit which she did. So therefore, the whole brisa is flawed. So you can't ask a question on Rav from a brisa that doesn't make any sense. So what do we have to do when you come to such a brisa? We have to make some repairs to the brisa. We have to say, you know what? You don't have the right text of the brisa. The way you gave over the brisa is not correct. I'm going to tell you the only way you can understand the brisa that will make sense. We're going to have to change the text. And when we change the text, you're going to see there's no question to begin with. You understand what's happening now? The way the brisa was presented as a kasha to Rav, the brisa itself makes no sense. So if it makes no sense, then that is cannot be the brisa. So what am I going to do? I have to amend the brisa. There was a mistake the way the brisa was presented. We're going to amend it, and based on the amendment, there'll be no question on Rav to begin with. That's all what Rav is doing. So how are you going to explain the brisa? Ela tori tzachi. Let's explain the brisa this way, and we're going to have to make a change to the first opinion's wording in that second clause of the first opinion of the Tana Kama. Read it like this. The first case is, if you give her to watch it as a deposit, and as a pekudim, be married to me with this pekudim, as long as there's a penny left, she's married, that we keep. But the second clause, but with a loan, ubemilva, with a loan, even though there's a penny left, ain't a mekudesh. It's not a good kedusha. It's a totally different text. The first text said what? A loan is a good kedusha. This one says a loan, even with a penny, is not a good kedusha. That's a big amendment to the text. And that's exactly saying that a loan is not, it's not a good kedusha, even if there is a penny. And that's exactly going to be like Rav's position. And that's going to be something that makes sense. Now let's think, Rav amends this part of the brisa, so it states the opposite of what it said before.
Right.
Early it was taught that the Tana Kama sanctions kiddushin when the loan has been completely spent. Now Rav argues that he invalidates kiddushin even if part of the loan is still intact. That's how you, that would be a sensible statement as well. Now I don't have any questions now, because no matter how I'm going to learn the case of Pikadon, how are we going to learn the case of Pikadon, where she didn't have responsibility, and therefore there's a penny left, she's married, and now I have to say a case of a loan, which is totally different, where it's not a good kiddushin. So now that's a good separation. Therefore, that part of the brisa makes sense, right? While who's arguing him? And Rav Shimon Elazar Omer Mishum Rav Meir. Now the next rabbi, he would keep it the way it is. He says milva harehu kipikadam. A milva is like a pikadam. And therefore, it's like a pikadam. As long as there's a penny left, it's okay. So at least now we've rendered it to a machlokes. If you can marry a woman with a malva, and Rav at least has one opinion to go like, right? According to Rav, the brisa as a whole states as follows. This is how we learn the brisa. The first clause speaks of a case in which the woman accepted responsibility for the deposit entrusted to her. So in which she accepted responsibility. She thus owes the man for the part of it that was lost or stolen. Right.
Without getting paid. Wait a minute. She accepts responsibility, but no payment. She doesn't get any payment for doing it.
That means she is paid.
She was paid, right?
That's what
she owes the man for the part of it that was lost or stolen. But the Tanna Kamma rules that she cannot become betrothed through this debt. Right? Can't because what he gave her, he can't marry her. Rather, kedusha only valid if a prut of the item remains intact and available for her to take it. There's a penny left, and he says, you can keep the penny. She can get married. She can get married. In the second clause, the Tanna Kamma introduces the case of a loan and teaches that with a loan, kedusha is never valid. Even if some of the money will still remain intact. That's exactly like Rav's position. Now this last point that the first opinion says is disputed by Rav Shimon ben Elazar, who says that Kedushin can take effect if some of the loaned money is still intact. He disagrees on that. He says it's just like a pikadon, if some money. The reason Tanna Kamma treats a loan differently than a deposit is because the woman acquires the money of the loan when she originally receives it. Okay? A loan is given to be spent, as we said. Thus, the man cannot suddenly give any of this money to her. Now, we're not talking about him waiving the loan now. See, we're not learning it that way. It was still intact. In the case of a deposit, however, the woman does not own the deposit while she's guarding it. Thus, when the man gives her what remains of it for kiddush, she in fact receives something she had not really owned. So it comes out now, we have a machlokes. We've learned it as a machlokes over there. So the first opinion is saying, when it's a loan, it doesn't work at all. Even if there's a penny, it doesn't work. Well, the second opinion says, no, if there is a penny, it works. Okay, so now, how does that get Rav out of the woods? You'll see, well, Rav at least, the first opinion clearly is like Rav. The second opinion might be arguing on a Rav, but let's see exactly what they're arguing on. What is the point of argument in that second point of the be mekadesh with the loan, where the first opinion says even if a penny's left it doesn't work? Well, the second opinion says yes. So what's the basis of the argument between those two opinions? So b'mai kamivli, what will be the argument between the first and second opinion regarding the loan if you have to have a penny not left or not? Right, let's look over here. The note Rav taught, how do we learn Rav originally, that betrothal cannot be affected through a loan since the loan is given to be spent. In other words, even the woman still has in her possession some of the original loaned money, she cannot become betrothed with this money since it already became hers before the man proposed to betroth her with it. She already had it. He didn't give her anything. While the Tanna Kamma, the Braisa, clearly concurs with this, because he says she can't be married to her, even if there's money, Rav Shimon ben Elazar says the loan is like a deposit. That second opinion of the Braisa argues, implying that Kiddushin is indeed valid since the loan remains intact. Gemara therefore questions whether it's possible to interpret the Braisa in such a way that both Tanayim will concur with Rav. See, what's the problem now? The second rabbi is still arguing on Rav. And you don't want the second rabbi to be, because then Rav is embroiled in a machlokas Tanayim, which isn't good for him. So we're trying to figure a way how, really, maybe that both could agree you can't marry with a loan, but here, it will still be okay. Now, the Gemara says, the commentary intends, of course, there's an easy way out. Of course, one possibility is they disagree as to whether the loan is given to be spent or not. The Tanna Kamma maintain the borrower owns the money that is lent to him, and therefore it cannot be given by the lender for kedushin, even if it's still intact. And Rav Shimon ben Elazar maintain the borrower may only use this money. If they disagree with this principle, however, then emerges that Rav's law is subject of a Tanoim dispute. We don't want that. We don't want to make him subject of a machlokas Tanoim. Then we're trying to find out another way to look that Rav is correct, and the other rabbi seems to argue they're overing over a side point, but not over the main point. They'll both agree you can't marry the woman with the loan, per se, but maybe they can make a machlokas in another way. So, Omar Rabba says, so let's see what we can do. How can we make that argument? Ashkechina l'rabban b'vei rabbi dis diyosvi v'kamri. We found the rabbis b'vei Rav in the yeshiva of Rav. This is Rav, remember, made the statement. So we still have students of Rav's yeshiva, and they were pondering this. And they're thinking, well, how can we explain this machlokas that will still fit it according to our Rebbe, Rav, who says your mekashim milvah doesn't work? So going to say, this is the debate that they have. These Tanoim, even though to be Makash or Milva, Rav says doesn't work, but they're going to argue on this point. B'milva b'reshus balim l'chazora, when there's a loan, how do we treat a loan? Is it considered in the property of the owner in terms of taking it back? And also, in regards to accidents, they will be arguing. Okay? In other words, if you borrow the money and you have not yet spent it. Okay? They're going to argue about the following. What if you borrow money and you didn't spend it yet? What's the status of the money? In other words, I lent you $100 and gave it to you, and you have it in your hand. Now, a minute later, I'm the lender. I say, you know what? I changed my mind. I want it back now.
Doesn't it depend whether the loan is repayable?
Maybe you just lend it without any terms. Here, I lend you the money. I lend you the money, right? And now, I say, no, I want it back. And you haven't spent it yet. You haven't spent it yet, and I want the money right back. So in other words, when I gave you the money, we're going to give you, like, in whose domain is it right now? Is it still considered in the owner's, the lender's, rishus, in the moral, even though you have it, but is it considered in my domain because you haven't spent it yet?
Yes.
Or is it already considered your domain?
No, it's true.
That's a machlokas. We're going to see. And also, what about responsibility for accidents? Mm-hmm. What if an accident happened when you had it there? Okay, let's see now. In other words, the Tanoim both agree that the borrower gains ownership over the money he borrows. That's Rav's principle. What was Rav's main idea? Once you give the person the loan, the person owns the money. Finished. So there's nothing you can do. He can't marry her because she already owns the money. That was his whole point. The only thing is he can forego the loan. That would be a benefit. But just to be married to what you already own, he says that once you lend the person money, they own the money. It becomes an asset.
For them.
But it becomes also, they have a, what do you call it, an accounts payable. But they have an asset.
Yeah.
Everybody agrees with that. They mirror the debate precisely when he gains the ownership. That's the machlokas. At what point does it change from a loan to an asset? At what point? Does it happen immediately when you just give it to him? Or something else have to happen? The Tana Kama maintains that the borrower acquires the money the instant he receives it from the lender.
That's right.
Tana Kama says, as soon as you give it to me, it's mine.
That's right.
From that moment on, the lender can no longer retract from his decision to lend it, and the borrower assumes full responsibility for whatever happens to it.
That's right.
Meaning, even if the money is lost through an unavoidable mishap, the borrower assumes the loss, because you already have it. In the Gemara's terminology, this position is known as, this is the lingo, milva reshus lova lechazora. The loan is in the domain of the borrower as regards to retraction. But the loan's in the same thing as regards to mishaps. Once you lend it, the borrower is the owner. Finished. And he has full responsibility over it. Finished. The asset has shifted immediately and is immediately in accounts payable. That's the Tanakama's opinion. Rav Shimon Elazar, however, argues that the borrower acquires the money only once he begins to spend a portion of it. Before he has spent any of it, the lender still has the right to retract, and likewise the liability for mishaps lies with the lender. This position is called, the loan is in the domain of the lender as regards retraction and mishaps. So this is the machlokas. When does the loan become the ownership, the asset of the borrower? Is it what immediately when it gets in his hand, or does he have to start to spend something of it? That's their machlokas. They can have that machlokas.
Yeah, the second one doesn't make sense. If you loan me $100 and then I get mugged a second later, I stole you the money.
Well, you have to know. I hear your question. You know, for some reason he's saying he has a status of a shomer chinam. It's a good question. Yeah, it's a good question.
You can ask me to watch it for you.
Okay, it's a good question. It's a good question. We'll accept your question. According to Rabbah, then, the Bryce's case of a loan is one in which the woman has borrowed money from the man but has not yet begun to spend it. That's the case of the Bryce. The Tanakhama rules that the woman cannot become betrothed with the money of the loan, for she already owned this money from the moment she first received it. According to Tanakhama, she already has it.
Yeah.
She can't be Makadosh, a woman with a deposit. unless there's she spent it and there's like a penny left. Remember he said, yes, if it gets lost, even if there's a penny left, right, before the man is given the Gushin. Shimon Lazar ever contends that the money can become betrothed with the money. According to him, the woman has not yet acquired the money since she has not yet started to spend it. That's going to be the Machlokes. If she hasn't spent it, does she own it or not? The first opinion says she owns it. The second one says not. So let's just finish up this point. Demar Sover, that one opinion holds, the first opinion holds, Milva, the loan, Birshus Lolokai. It's immediately in the borrower's possession. Immediately. The Hu Adin owns him, and therefore he has responsibility if it's lost or whatever. Well, Marisov, the other opinion holds, Milva Rishus Balam Kaima, that the Milva immediately goes, is what? Is the owner's. In the beginning, something still has to happen. Hu Adin owns him. And if any accidents happens, then he suffers the loss. Okay, according to this explanation, the Tanaim dealt with a loan that a woman has not yet begun to spend and debated whether or not she has already acquired the money at this early stage. Rav, but when Rav said his halach, he can't be Mekadosh woman with a milva, he dealt with a loan the woman has begun to spend. And that's when everybody agrees it's her asset. So you see how they answer the question. Rav says that when he says a woman be Mekadosh milva doesn't work, it's only once she has begun to spend the money. Then it's everybody agrees that it's hers and he hasn't given anything. The machlokas in this brisa is before she spent the money, is it considered hers or not? Okay, we'll stop at this point. We'll review this part again tomorrow. This last part we'll review.
Tomorrow, not tomorrow.
Not tomorrow, Wednesday. Thank you. We'll review it on by Wednesday. We'll have good forgotten this and we'll review it again. This last point. We'll